to do, what to do, what to do. What to do indeed.
What?
Pooh?
Christopher Robin.
All right, let's start the show. They're hooking it.
Oh my God.
No. No. Too much.
Too much.
Wrong
show. Okay, I meant like the...
Welcome to Corn Killers, our mission to report the intel from the front lines of the corn cutting revolution so you have the information you need to be able to watch what you want, where you want, when you want, and we try to help you figure all that stuff out. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Brian Brushwood, and I was referring to the movie Hook.
Sure, you were.
Hook,
yes.
With Winnie the Pooh.
That's what to tell the five-year-old in the car with you now.
It's a guy who's lost his way, used to embody childlike innocence, and now he's a grizzled old Jedi.
That, of course, was Christopher Robin.
Yes.
The trailer for the tear-jerking movie.
The Hookening.
That is going to make you cry because it's sentimental about childhood.
It's probably
going
to be great. If it's half as good as Paddington, then I'm 100% on board.
If we sound like we're like a little snappier,
able to talk over each other,
yeah,
not handing the mic back and forth.
We don't have to wait for the other person to shut up. We can just keep talking.
We don't just end every phrase with over.
It's because Brian is graciously hosting me in his studios here in Austin, Texas.
It was a near thing. Shareholders were not for it, but I said no. Our show.
But the president signed an executive order at the last minute declaring me not a security risk, unlike Broadcom.
Goodness.
So here I am. Let's start out with our primary target. Wall Street research firm Moffitt Nathanson recently noted that the pay TV sector saw a reduction of more than 500,000 traditional pay TV customers during the fourth quarter. So it's time for our regular check-in. How close to accepting reality are they?
This is when I saw that it was our primary target, I was like, it's the same primary target we've had for 8 years now.
Yeah. Well, remember, 7 years ago, it's like, temporary.
It's not that bad.
Temporary fall.
Just a little dip.
Then it's the housing market.
The cable industry is like the Black Knight, right? They're like, it's fine. It's just a flesh wound.
Just a flesh wound, yeah. Satellite TV providers were the harder hit. Actually, Dish and DirecTV lost a combined 268,000 satellite TV subscribers during the last 3 months of 2017. That does not include Sling TV and DirecTV Now. 83 million households, however, still subscribe to cable in the United States, giving the cable industry a warm blanket to pretend like everything is fine.
And to be honest, it really is kind of fine. I mean, they're still making money and they're transitioning. As much as they are going to claim that this is not happening, they're also behind the scenes making all kinds of plans and trying out different future business models.
Now, one of the things that these companies do is that a lot of them, like Comcast owns NBC Universal, right? And so they have other arms of their business they can look to. And in those cases, a lot of them are seeing pressure from the Netflixes and Hulus of the world to reduce commercials because people say, well, wait a minute, I watch Netflix, I don't have to have commercials. If I pay a couple of dollars extra on Hulu, I don't have to have commercials.
Yeah, that has been really transformative. Hulu became a top tier experience for me the moment that it became possible to experience it with no commercials.
Now, since 2009, ad time per hour had gone up from 14 minutes and 27 seconds in the U.S. to 15 minutes and 38 seconds on average per hour on cable, and from 13 minutes 25 to 14 minutes 15 per hour on broadcast. I actually didn't realize that broadcast, not that much, but was slightly behind cable in the number of minutes per hour. I thought it was the opposite.
I think it makes sense just because broadcast is so well established, the numbers are a lot bigger, and it's easier to cook the golden goose. When you're doing very expensive programming, you know, like, let's say, bad example, Star Trek Discovery or whatever, you know, it's like you want them to mainly be focused on the content, and you sell at a very high price that little bit of real estate for the ad stuff. Whereas if you're doing like an HGTV
Chicago
thing,
Fire and or Police and or like all the broadcast shows are in Chicago now.
So, oh, really? Yeah. Oh, is that a thing?
There's a whole series of them.
Okay.
Yeah. I think there's only three. But
meanwhile, when you have cheaper content, it's easy to dilute it. It's like, whatever. Nobody's sitting down with the family all to watch at the exact same time.
Like HGTV's teases are going to hold you.
HGTV's new show, Cleaning a Room, the show.
How much would you pay for this clean room? Find out after the break.
Yeah.
The broadcast networks are starting to get it. Fox indicated it's going to reduce ad time by 2 minutes per hour by 2020. NBC says it will reduce ad time by 10%. I didn't get a year on that one. But the programming costs are still rising, and cable companies are still raising rates. So we're yet to see the other shoe drop. Like, ad time coming down seems like that's inevitable. Price for cable has to come down, I think, in the face of all of this competition. And what this article from the Wall Street Journal suggested was, or Motherboard rather, was maybe they'll shift that into internet. You might see your internet price rise as they bring down the price of cable.
So there we go. That's, you just answered my question. My question is, where do you find the money then, right? If you, everything is fractioning? What am I saying?
Fracturing.
Fracturing. Yeah, sorry. It's a denominators, numerators. Yeah. They're all over the place.
Girls with math right before this.
But because everything is splitting, I want to say there's like 1,000 new television shows coming out every year or some insane number.
Yeah.
And obviously those are reaching more and more targeted niches. But the question is, how do you monetize it correctly? And one is make everything cheap, which we saw the explosion over the last couple of decades of reality programming because it's very affordable. But now we got to figure out some other way to sneak in, I guess, ads. For a long time, people were talking about product placements and digitally, you know, continuing to update various, you know, somebody's drinking a Coke. It's a Coke this week. It's a Pepsi next week or whatever. But that doesn't seem to have exploded as a revenue source.
It's definitely happening. Yeah.
Oh, sure. But it's not like,
we don't have to have ads anymore.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I think you're going to see a few things. One, you're already seeing the satellite companies, and it makes sense since they're the harder hit, putting out their own skinny bundles, right? We've got Sling TV. We've got DirecTV Now. They are ready for the transition. They've got their products. Comcast is sort of toe in the water with an over-the-top bundle, but you have to be a Comcast internet subscriber to get it. So they don't want to erode too fast, so they want to hold on to you. I'll be interested to see what Spectrum, Cablevision, Spectrum and Cablevision and others do. Spectrum was doing a lot more, and then the whole Time Warner merger with Charter happened, and I think that kind of put some things on pause. I imagine those will start to come back. So those delivery companies will come up with their own things. We are seeing more program providers come up with their own things, like Philo from Viacom.
Mm-hmm.
And Discovery, which is acquiring Scripps Networks, just had Discovery CEO saying that those 19 cable networks that now include not only the Discovery channels, but also HGTV and TLC and Food, may start their own streaming service. And he threw out $6 a month in his statement as sort of
how
like
calculated
around there.
Do you think that was?
Those things are always very calculated. So I'm sure they're like, say six and we'll test what the reaction
is. Right. We'll get the feedback. We'll see what people scream about.
So we're going to see the cable companies coming up with their own over-the-top bundles. We're going to see the content producers coming up with their own content bundles.
Yep, yep.
We might see Comcast do both because they own NBC Universal. And so I think what we're headed for is that shakeout of we're going to just see the cable subscription slowly go from 83 to 70 to 60 and the internet services rise and rise and rise.
That's the key, because I think people in general are not so price sensitive about their internet service as long as they're getting a perceived increase or benefit, or whether it's faster or no caps or whatever, as long as you could justify the increased cost. I think most of us have just spent a whole lifetime budgeting $150 a month to the man, and then they'll just figure out a way to get that same $150.
I was staying in a hotel room here in Austin. The cable TV didn't have a wire because it's a brand new hotel. We
wow.
didn't find it out until we'd been there a day. I called and let them know, sort of like, you should probably know that this isn't here, and watched all my shows anyway. Because
right.
I could watch them on my laptop.
Well,
I could have hooked them up to the HDMI cable if I really wanted to.
Sure.
But, you know, half the time, cable's working, I don't.
That's another thing that I'm really surprised by, is how much of a satisfactory experience I'm able to get watching a show completely just on a cell phone nowadays. And there's entire, you know, dramatic experiences that I never saw the way they were intended.
Yeah, yeah. I watched Counterpart on my laptop.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I tried HBO Now, Chrome told me I needed a Flash plugin.
Flash.
So instead of switching to Safari or something like that, or troubleshooting, I just pulled out my phone.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's good enough.
I'll watch Deadwood on the phone this time.
Sure.
Fine,
sure.
You know, and then I was like, oh, now I can walk around and do a couple other things, like gave you more freedom. So anyway, I think the point of this is,
I'm sure that's the way David Milch wanted that to be experienced. I'm trying to make dramatic stories.
He's looking up my address right now.
You can casually look at
while you brush your teeth.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly what he wanted. I think that's where we're headed. And the only question is, what kind of services what are these services going to look like? Because the PlayStation views look very much like cable, right? And they have all the sports and all the regional networks and everything.
It's the most familiar.
Yeah. But they adapt.
Yep.
So PlayStation View and Sling TV both, when I'm in Austin, they give me the Austin channels, right? And they give me the Austin local sports networks. So suddenly they are truly national cable systems. But is that what we're going to want? Are all these networks going to survive? Are all these niche networks going to survive when they don't have that cable system that says, well, you have to carry these 15 channels if you want ESPN?
Well, I think, okay, I'm making everything up, right?
All right. So, but yeah, no, this is total opinion land.
For now, the new name of the podcast, Total Opinion Land with Brian and Tom.
That's a good way. I
feel like the safest play for all the over-the-top networks is to resemble cable as much as possible, because the one thing, and nowadays you don't have to have that conversation nearly as much as you used to when, even Eileen was very hesitant about quote unquote giving right. up cable. What did that mean? So the answer is you want to make it feel as much like cable, like, yeah, no, you still have cable. It's just, guess what? Cheaper and uses your internet and you don't have to give money to these jerks.
And it works anywhere that gigabit internet is out, or even 300 megabits per second internet is out.
Sure.
It's a no-brainer.
Even
50 megabit per second, it's
LTE
gonna be like,
or whatever.
It'll be fine, and people will be hesitant, but it'll work. Yeah, LTE, 5G service is coming. That'll help it. So the bandwidth will get there. Not everybody has that bandwidth yet, so some people are going to be more skeptical than others.
And as 5G rolls out, eventually we're just going to be swimming in bandwidth. But I had a point. I was so excited, and now I lost it because I was polite. Never be polite. That's my point.
No, that's our motto here at Total Opinion Land.
I think what'll happen is maybe 5 years from now. Right now, all the big players look the most like cable, but I think more algorithmically based, watching your viewing habits, more the way YouTube is running things. I think a more YouTube-like interface with cable-quality content will be the dominant player 5 years from now.
Yeah, I could see a world where all three models coexist, where there's a Philo for Viacom, and there's a Discovery for Discovery Scripts. But they're also part of the other systems. Right now, Viacom's like, no, we're going to go it alone. I think they're on Sling TV and DirecTV Now, and that's it.
Again, sounds insane, but that's probably not about when you're
in
a land rush.
You got to test those boundaries. You got to figure out what the...
When you're in a land rush, it pays to be there first. Even if you're doing the wrong thing, the company that's doing something, you know, like CISO did a lot of stuff wrong. That's why they ended up getting sold.
I'm still convinced that NBC absolutely knew it was going to be a failure.
I think so.
We just want to learn.
Well,
put it out there. Maybe it'll work.
Hulu, even if it doesn't matter. Hulu almost certainly was intended to be a failure.
Yeah.
And much to their chagrin, turned out to be...
crap, now what do we do?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Sell it to Disney. That'll be fine. All right. We are not a failure, thanks to you and you alone. If you support us on Patreon, that is why we're here at patreon.com/cordkillers, and we have a very nice email.
Yeah. Now, you know that we are at 1,499 patrons right now.
Okay.
One patron will take us over the 1,500 mark, and it occurs to me that some people maybe are intimidated. And so B. Lisa wrote to us saying, "Hi, Tom and Brian. Just wanted to say something to the segment of your audience who are not yet your bosses, who want to support you but don't want to sign up for something. I can totally understand it, but I want to encourage them that Patreon is easy. Some have even found it highly addictive." That's a like the Slurm logo. I found it addictive after signing up, find themselves supporting other creators and discovering new content. If you have a PayPal account, it's especially easy to use Patreon. I encourage you not to reject it too quickly. Also, about kids watching adult content. Oh, this is from a discussion last week. Or wanting to. My kids are in their 20s now, two boys, and the lure seemed to be when their peers were watching something. So my youngest saw boobs on Game of Thrones when he was maybe a bit younger than I was comfortable with, because I talked to his parents and they were letting their kids watch it, which makes sense. I think it is very peer. Speaking of peer pressure, all your friends are supporting us at patreon.com/cordkillers. Why don't you be like them?
Yeah, just be like them. It's easier than thinking about it. patreon.com/cordkillers. Let's talk about how to watch. Engadget has a pretty interesting article talking about all of the things Netflix has been doing. I think Netflix took them on a tour to kind of puff up this aspect of things, which is interesting in itself. But Netflix has a lot of technology, and they feel that that is a differentiating factor for them over the Amazons and even the broadcast networks of the world. Netflix is like, we are a tech company, and we have developed the technology to make shows and stream shows, not just the technology to get subscribers. So a few facts from this article. Netflix shoots in 6K, because they want to be ahead and have all the pixels that are
future
possible.
Proofing.
Yeah. They are working on compression algorithms so that the higher resolution they have, the easier it will be to stream it, not just in places in the US with lower bandwidth, but places around the world. Remember, it's an international company now, and there are a lot of places that have slower mobile bandwidth, and they want to get those people on board as well with the highest possible resolution they can. Netflix has an app called Move that they use to help simplify the production process. So when someone's producing a Netflix show, they can use Move to do the scheduling and logistics and all of that. And apparently it makes a lot of things easier. And this article points out Netflix is a major infrastructure provider for Netflix. They don't provide it to anyone else, but their only real competitor is BAMTech, the former Major League Baseball Advanced Media that Disney is the majority owner of now.
So think about the infrastructure thing first. That's how you know that that you're killing it at life, is when you say we could make more money from the state of Illinois area if we upgrade their internet so that more people have high quality bandwidth available. That was a friend of mine was a legendary magician, and he realized that his DVD sales had leveled off because he sold it to all the magicians, and his new game plan would be like, well, I guess I need to go make more magicians out there so they'll buy all my
stuff. Buy more DVDs.
Exactly, yeah. Right? Yeah. But this is another advantage of being a leader in a new space. Is the downside, of course, you have to solve a bunch of interesting problems that have never existed before. But the upside is you have a very big head start on everybody else, and you can sell those solutions to everybody behind you in the pipeline.
Yeah, and that's what Amazon did with Amazon Web Services and things like that. I wonder, I'm always trying to figure out, because, you know, from House of Cards to international distribution to all these steps, Netflix has always done the thing that looked weird right before it became very obvious that that's the thing they needed to do. They've always been good at being a step ahead. Is the next step for them becoming an infrastructure provider, using excess capacity, renting out Move to production companies that aren't making Netflix stuff, using the streaming infrastructure and renting that out to other broadcast networks that want to use to make their Philos and their Discovery streaming products?
So we're still in total opinion land right now?
Welcome back to total opinion land.
Okay, so if I was going to speculate, here's what I think would be the smartest thing, is not to license any of their technologies, but instead to splinter or basically quietly found another company with a different brand position than Netflix. Netflix right now is the place you go to watch Netflix originals. Now, that's very different from the DVDs by mail company they used to be 20 years ago. But there's now these over-the-top networks are well-known enough that, and we're seeing Netflix sort of drift in its content over to less high quality stuff, more, as we euphemistically called it, waterfall television. I wonder if there won't be a split and they'll maybe use their position, their infrastructure, the solutions they have. And they're like, what would Netflix's competitor look like? Let's make that company and be our own competitor, or let's found that other company.
Yeah, that's what Major League Baseball did with Major League Baseball Advanced Media.
Oh, yeah, of course.
They
yeah.
said, we're a baseball.
Yeah, we're a baseball.
we do not know. Make company to do streaming yes. while we do the baseball.
Yes.
And then that turned into not only a great thing for Major League Baseball, mm-hmm. but it turned into a valuable asset that they've now spun off. You wouldn't have to spin it off, right? Amazon Web Services was not spun off. It was created within Amazon and stays within Amazon.
Sure.
But you could create
a different ecosystem, and you could do it smarter than, God love them, Sling with this orange and blue package and all that stuff. Should have just made two different companies that did two different offerings. And two different brands.
They should have just made they should just make a package that has everything. It can be done,
ding,
right?
Ding, ding,
like
ding.
They sort of wound up here, and now it's like, okay, how do we jump across the creek to get where PlayStation View and Hulu Live are?
Yeah.
We have an email coming a little later that sheds some light on that problem. Those are also problems that'll go away in the next 3 or 4 years.
So one of the things we talked about before the show is I would love to know some of the crazy stuff they're trying in the R&D side of things over at Netflix, because one of the best, it's you could tell their future focus because like recording everything in 6K, smart move. But there's some phenomenal algorithmic advances in upscaling. They're going to be interested in it partly from a bandwidth conservation standpoint, but also their entire back catalog, they're going to want that to look better in the future. And it might be the kind of thing that you spend, instead of a bazillion dollars spending on 6K, instead you write an algorithm that's able to take old crappy footage and then, you know, draw in the lines between the dots, make it look real good.
That is the kind of thing that makes me think maybe there'll be Apple in this, in all of our scenarios, and say, no, we develop things for us to use. And we buy tiny, small companies every once in a while because that adds a thing that we want to do for us. And then we never license it out to anybody. We never sell it to anybody. And we make fat stacks of cash that get us close to being the first $1 trillion company ever.
Yeah, that's, I bet they'd be okay with that.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see which of these paths they take. Also, I just registered totalopinionland.com.
Did you use promo code SCAMSCHOOL for 15% off?
Damn it. Yes, of course I did. Let's talk about what to watch in Under Surveillance.
Not like real estate. It's all about location, location, location.
Under Surveillance.
Listen, folks saying like, I would cut the cord, but what about sports? Listen to the next 15 minutes of the show, okay? We got a lot of sports today. Twitter has reached a three-year deal with Major League Soccer to show at least 24 weekly live matches. The first was actually on March 10th, Los Angeles FC versus Real Salt Lake. So Twitter lost their NFL deal, and then they, I don't think they have their MLB deal anymore, but they got Major League Soccer. So they're still scrappy. They're still trying to stay in it.
All of this still feels like just testing the waters. Basically, you know, find a niche or at least have a foot in the
game.
Let's
prove we can do it.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, exactly. New Ready Player One teaser came out, and actually the first showing of the movie happened here in South by Southwest. I did not see it. But the film is coming on March 29th. Those first reactions are mostly positive. Not all positive, 100%, but I'd say 70-30.
So in Arnold Schwarzenegger's autobiography, Total Recall, he talked about the problematic launch of the movie, Total Recall. He said that that 2 weeks beforehand, it was clear that the folks who were running the marketing side of things weren't giving the right message. It was not resonating, and it really looked like it was going to be a massive, massive flop. So then they tried highly experimental advertising, telling the more deeper, nuanced parts of the psychological drama that happens in there, the existential crisis angle and all that stuff, and it happened to land just in time. It ended up being one of the fastest movies for him ever to go from zero to $100 million. The marketing campaigns I'm seeing with Ready Player One sound like everybody likes what they got. Nobody knows how to sell it. If you look at the trailers, they are all over the map. One is all the nostalgia. One of them is a sweeping, joyful, tearful wizard with keys. One of them is
yeah,
you know, sci-fi cool gear.
Well, this teaser is there's a quest that you need to go on and win, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll be really curious to hear if they stick the landing on this one. And it is very heartening, though, to hear that the early reviews are positive.
Yeah, the reviews that were posted from Twitter and replicated in this IO9 story, the ones that were positive were, I loved every reference. I felt like I was bathing in Spielberg in the best possible way kind of feeling. The negatives were, you know, you can't just throw a bunch of references at the wall and expect that to entertain me.
Yeah.
So it really is going to hinge on how much nostalgia you want to feel or do feel, I think,
and the problem,
from these reactions.
The challenge, I guess, would be the best way to put it. The challenge is that even in the book, the references were the seasoning. They were not the main dish. And all of the marketing is acting like the references are the movie. And I'm like, well, I don't want to go.
And a lot of these reviews,
fistfuls of salt, you
make
know?
It sound like maybe it's a fistful of references. And then for a few references more.
The references ride again.
Yeah.
All right. Every which way but references.
Legion has a trailer that includes dancing. The show is returning April 3rd, and it just looks better every time I see a trailer.
I did not realize how much I'd miss David and his crazy view of the world. And I got to tell you, from this trailer, it looks like maybe they're acting like the whole first season didn't happen. And that's at least that's how it's going to begin or try to convince us. And
maybe
I'm fine with it either way.
Brian and I talked about like six different scenarios they could take. And I think we're fine with all of them. So, yeah.
What is all this dancing? Is just dancing?
Yeah. Does there need to be a reason, Bryce?
I
Guess not.
You watched the first season of Legion, right?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they did the same thing in there. I think this is a crafted trailer to make sure that they touch on all the beats that people like from the first first season.
And show you things that are very obviously not the same. So you're not like, oh, they're just rerunning season one. Facebook has exclusive streaming rights for 25 weekday Major League Baseball games this season, starting April 4th with the Phillies and the Mets.
Hey, I got a question. Yeah. Is any of this going to matter until one portal becomes like this business of maybe it's a sports thing and people are more accustomed to this game's on this network, this game's on another network. I feel like there's a tipping point at which like I can always go there and I will always see the game. Do we need to wait for that, or is this piecemeal business going to pay off?
No, well, with baseball particularly, it's different with different sports. With baseball particularly, usually fans are, I watch my team on my team's channel. Like, I'm Fox Sports Midwest, which carries the Cardinals, and that's where I watch the Cardinals, unless they're not, because they're on the national game of the week, and then I have to go find them. Then there's also the idea, which is not exclusive, people can be both, of I like to watch the baseball on Wednesday or on Saturday or whatever.
You're like, who's playing? I don't know. Whatever. Yeah,
no, it's like, I like that I get to see all the different teams. And Facebook is leaning into that for the people who are like, now, because you're on your laptop, and you're in Facebook, we can just send you an alert like, hey, game's on, and you could watch it there. I think it's kind of a spin on that.
I can buy that. So in a similar way that Twitch.tv has made for an entire generation of musicians, they've virtualized the experience of going to a coffee house and having some music playing, only it's, you know, you window and you have the chat room or whatever.
Yeah.
It's that for the local sports bar.
Yeah.
Where it's like you don't go to the local sports bar because of who's playing on the screens. You go there to be with other people.
Yeah. You turn on your regional sports network to watch your team. You turn on ESPN because it's Wednesday night baseball, and you're right. Like, let's see who's on. Netflix released the first full trailer for Lost in Space, the series coming April 13th.
This looks better than the 1998 movie of the same day.
Yes, it does.
It looks like it's got a little more depth to it. I'm digging it. I didn't think I would say this about a Lost in Space thing. Also, you and I both realized that we went our whole lives without realizing that Lost in Space is just Swiss Family Robinson.
Like,
and
literally Robinson.
They even made the name Robinson.
Robinson.
Whoops.
Yeah. Also, I like that. I don't want to get too spoilery, but this is from the trailer, so I feel like I can safely skirt around it. They give the robot a reason for appearing, which mm-hmm. in the original Lost in Space, it's just like, hey, we got a robot because all Swiss Family Space Robinsons
have
robots.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Originally, it was like, in the future, everyone will have a robot.
Yeah. Amazon's NFL documentary series, All or Nothing, which follows a different team. They followed the LA Rams. They followed the St. Louis Cardinals. The Arizona Cardinals. They followed the St. Louis Rams and the St. Louis Cardinals.
Do the Brooklyn Dodgers show up?
Yeah. They followed the St. Louis Browns. No. Okay. They're following the Dallas Cowboys, a real team, for an 8-episode run narrated by John Hamm. Season starts April 27th.
So this is just really good documentary behind the scenes.
Yeah, it's like what happens across the season for this team and the drama behind it.
This feels like this kind of show could only exist thanks to the extraordinary technological advancements of the last 20 or 30 years.
I mean, there have been similar things done by HBO and even ESPN.
This level
there's
of
more that you can do now. Yeah.
Is this going to be timely like the HBO series?
Pretty timely.
Pretty time. Okay. Yeah.
Obviously not like this week. Like Sunday happens and then Monday. It's not that timely.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Because that's it. I don't even remember the name of the HBO show now, but that was an interesting part of it is that it was pretty recent.
Yeah.
When you would see those episodes.
Luke Cage season 2 premieres June 22nd, and it's got a teaser out where Luke Cage is a badass.
Oh, well, shocker.
Yeah. playing to type.
I have a story about Luke Cage that we'll talk about in just a little bit.
Jessica Jones also is out now.
Yes.
It just came out this weekend.
You know what? Here, I'll tell that story now. So I decided for Jessica Jones, I'm going to experience the entire story just as an audiobook because every Netflix original has those audio descriptor tracks for the visually impaired. And I was like, I'm going to do this. It's going to be great.
She takes a shot of whiskey.
Yes.
She takes another shot of whiskey.
Yeah. So sure enough, that's what it was like. hyped for the first 15-20 minutes, and I'm like, man, thematically season two is really tracking with what they did in season one. She's even going to a bar and describing, and then I looked down, I finally after 20 minutes I looked down, I'm like, I'm definitely just listening to season one, episode one. But it was amazing because I was coming up with all new visual images completely unrelated to my first viewing of it.
And of course, first trailer for Christopher Robin is out. We talked about that at the beginning of the show, and that movie arrives August 3rd. A few things that are developing. Jon Favreau has been signed to executive produce and write a live-action Star Wars series for Disney's upcoming streaming service coming in 2019.
He's so good. He's so good, and I think he
big fan,
will,
too.
Yeah. What's funny is I think I'm beyond the point where I care whether or not somebody is a fan of Star Wars. I think we need non-Star Wars fans in the Star Wars space. But Jon Favreau will figure out how to do something that hasn't been done
before. It's not determinative, right? Ryan Johnson was a big fan. J.J. Abrams was a big fan. They made very different Star Wars movies.
Yeah, yeah, so. You don't say. Was there a difference? like when Ryan Johnson definitely flushed entire setups down the toilet.
JJ, here are your ideas.
You're like, that's dumb. Snoke is the walking embodiment of our writer's room. They think you suck.
Netflix has ordered 10 episodes of Norm MacDonald Has a Show.
E-hi-hi-yo. I did hosted not by, get, oh, I did. When you read it, it doesn't
I
pop
know,
like that.
I know.
Oh, that's funny.
Adam Egit, who you might know as a sidekick on Norm MacDonald Live, will be on Norm MacDonald Has a Show. And David Letterman is listed as a location scout.
That sounds like something Norm MacDonald would do. By the way, there's a fantastic interview where Letterman talks about, this is before my next guest needs no introduction. He was talking about his heart surgery and all that stuff. It's really, really good.
Yep. And another major talk show host, comedian being taken by Netflix. Netflix has also signed a deal with Deadpool creator Rob Liefeld's Extreme Studios. The deal would create a cinematic universe out of characters from non-Deadpool creations from Extreme, like Youngblood and Bloodstrike.
Cool.
Youngblood, Bloodstrike, Strike Young,
Strike Blood. Just a Robert Blood.
Marvel Cinematic Blood Universe. All right, let's talk about what we're watching. Other than Counterpart and Deadwood, which we will talk about in spoiler time, watched the finale of Star Wars Rebels.
And?
The finale of the series, Star Wars
like
Rebels.
Like they're done. They're done
they
with
are
the whole
done,
thing.
Done. They wrapped it up. And it took me a couple days to process, which I think is really a good thing.
Wow.
The third to last episode was just fantastic. The second to last episode really felt like it was just part of the last episode. Mm-hmm. And there were some cool battle scenes and everything. And then the very last episode did things that I did not expect, had a jump forward that told me the fates of characters.
Oh, wow.
Post Return of the Jedi.
Wow.
That was a treat, but also befuddling, because I'm like, well, wait a minute. If X is there, but Y is not.
The way you're describing it, it feels maybe tonally close to like the way Star Trek The Next Generation ended, where you saw future reality of where everybody ends up.
Although it's not because of a senile
Q doesn't show up.
I came out of watching it and Eileen's like, well, what'd you think? I'm like, I don't know.
And that's great.
Yeah.
When you're left, when something's really sticky like that, that just you can't shake it, and days later you're going back to it. That's a pretty good feeling.
What about you?
Just Usual Suspects, Counterpart, Deadwood, and just started Jessica Jones twice.
Season one, episode one. Yeah. All right, Bryce, what should we be on the lookout for?
Hey, I got a pick for you guys this week. Before I get into the pick, I wanted to do a quick update on a show that we talked about on the lookout a while ago. You might remember Love. The dramedy from Judd Apatow is now finished on Netflix. They just premiered the finale, third season. It's a very good time to get in. I think it's a very good finale. And it's a quick watch. Three seasons of half hours.
Good to know.
This week I wanted to share with you a new Netflix reality cooking competition show called Nailed It. Have you guys seen any of these clips or trailers?
No, I've not seen any of it, but it looks like we were talking about this on the Weird Things podcast. It looks like they're basically taking the meme of people trying to recreate awesome Pinterest projects, having them turn out horribly bad, and then, you know, posting Nailed It on there.
Yeah, exactly, right? So it's three contestants, each episode playing for a $10,000 prize. And what's really fascinating about watching it is that it's not serious at all.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you look at Chopped is super serious.
Oh,
Top
yeah.
Chef,
Top
super
Chef,
serious.
Right.
But this is they're joking with the judges and the contestants. There's this this accepted stance that like,
and these aren't chefs.
They're not chefs. They're like maybe they do some home cooking, and that's just so a refreshing change of pace for a reality cooking show.
Like actual reality?
It's well, it indicates a level of self-awareness, similar to like, you know, At Midnight would just, you know, they would say points. Like, it doesn't matter how many points there are. Just sure, you get points because that's what we're doing.
The concept could be mean, right? If the idea is like, oh, it's a show about fails, it could be mean, and it's not, which is the most heartwarming part is that everyone's in on it. There's no resentment. There's no cattiness. It's just really fun. And to the point where they give them the recipes. They have a big iPad right on the thing, and they just tell you, this is how you make it. Go and make it. Just you can make it. It's really good. Also, like Chopped, there are two rounds in each episode. There's no elimination. The first round doesn't even matter.
I love the fact that people are savvy enough now that it's like, no, we don't need this forced narrative, this obvious trope.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who needs conflict?
Right? Yeah.
Well, and you still get...
Just be pleasant.
You still get, like, the food porny element, because they'll show you the right way that they make it, and you'll learn kind of like, oh, you know, with this technique, you actually want to use a spoon, or, you know...
Well, that's very interesting, because that's the other reason that I think people watch these shows, is they want to pick up tricks from the experts.
Which is,
so they're still doing that.
Yeah. But with, you know, these are desserts and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just really good. One last thing is that it doesn't have ad breaks. And when you watch a show like this without ad breaks, the format is still there, right? They still build up for these kind of act break moments, but then usually they still cut to the title card and then just move on to the very next thing. And I guess there's some organic tension of going to a commercial break, but because it's not even a very serious show, that tension is not really important anyway.
Okay. Yeah, because I used to be a big Top Chef fan, and I would watch them on iTunes without ads.
Oh, without ads. And they would recap it, right?
The recaps were the annoying part, right?
Like, and there's none of that now.
Yeah.
And so even though
I didn't mind the breaks, right? But when they like, when we last saw it, Bob, he was having a problem with his fryer. I'm like, yeah,
that,
I know.
That
I
was
just
three
saw that
seconds ago. Yeah.
Well, what's nice, it means that those 44-minute shows are telling the same story here, but in 31 minutes.
Yeah. Okay.
And so it's really cool. There's only 6 episodes, which makes me think it's another testing the waters. But it's really good, and it's funny, and just really sweet.
So, Bryce, would you say they nailed it?
Oh, they definitely nailed it. I mean, I almost wrote that in my copy.
And then you're like, that would be a really dumb thing.
I thought that was very on the nose. But that's 6 episodes of Nailed It now on Netflix.
Hey, if you got something we should be on the lookout for, email us cordkillers@gmail.com and we will share with the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because this is Total Opinion Live.
Total Opinion Live with Carson Daly. With Carson Weekly.
Hey, Brian.
Yeah.
Are you doing things?
You know what? I've ascended. I've virtualized myself to where I don't even have to do things. I get other people to do really interesting things. Like all of the talented writers at themodernrogue.com. That's the weirdest thing is, so if you guys haven't heard, cracked.com laid off a whole bunch of people, and I was able to nab one of my favorite writers there. John Cheese is now editor in chief.
He's always been the editor in cheese, Brian.
Over at themodernrogue.com.
Editor in cheese.
And a bunch
forever.
A bunch of the writers also freelance over at cracked.com. Every single episode has fantastic takeaways.
Article.
Episode. Jeez. They're really, really good. My favorite thing is, I mean, I'm writing the checks, but I wake up in the morning and I'm like, and it's my go-to website to read a new article. I'm like, hey, this is great. This is awesome stuff.
Keep writing for me.
Yeah, exactly.
I hope other people also like it.
I really hope other people like it because it takes a while to get off the ground.
And it's themodernrogue.com.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the front lines.
Front lines.
Speaking at South by Southwest on Monday, Apple's Eddie Q addressed all the original TV content Apple has been acquiring. Brian, he pulled back the curtain and said, we're not after quantity. We're after quality.
Quality programming.
He compared Apple's approach to Pixar's as far as focusing on quality storytelling and said there would be some surprises in store for how the programming is viewed once available.
So guy who says things says same things.
Kind of, yeah.
Right?
He said, we're going to make good things and not tell you how we'll show them to you yet.
That's so, what a mystery.
And then, he didn't say this, but later in the day, it was reported that Apple has picked up 2 seasons of Central Park, a new musical animated comedy from Lauren Bouchard, the creator of Bob's Burgers, about a group of the park's caretakers.
Very excited about that. The guy's been doing a lot of good stuff for a long time.
That's the first Apple original that you've said very excited about.
Oh, you're right. Everything else has been scancy pants glances from me. This
Eddie
is it.
Q wins this round.
Netflix says 70% of its streams are done on TVs, even though 40% of subscribers sign up on a PC and 30% sign up on a phone. Last autumn, YouTube TV said more than half of its streams were on TV. I think a big part of it is just like these TCL televisions coming with Rokus baked in. It's just so easy.
Well, it's fun to look at their graph, too, because they show like signed up on a PC or signed up on a phone, watched on a phone, signed up on a phone, watched on a phone, signed up to a phone, didn't watch on a phone very much. Like over time, they start to realize I can get that on my TCL TV or I can get that on my Roku or whatever.
Exactly.
And they start shifting over there. I thought that was interesting. Netflix is also testing a feature that lets kids collect virtual patches for watching certain shows like A Series of Unfortunate Events or Trolls. Netflix said it has not decided for sure to roll out the feature to everyone. As a father of three, why would they do that?
They would do it, number one, because it would work.
Yeah.
And it would trigger that completionist unlocking
And kids would more likely want to watch Netflix shows then instead of other series.
Because and what happens is
the patches.
It would also answer the question, once something ends, what do I watch next? Well, now you have a job to do.
Got it.
And it's training them to explore the entire ecosystem and stuff. However, as a dad, I'm not a fan of this at all because same reason I'm not a fan of loop boxes. You're teaching my kids to grow a gambling addiction, basically.
Well, and there's no winning. You collect the patches to collect the patches. Like, there's no end game. You don't unlock special episodes or anything like that.
Bryce in the chat was calling it predatory. I can't disagree with that.
It'd be even more predatory if they gave you things, but it's more inexplicable that they don't even give you things.
I'm very aware these days. There's a fantastic program called Under the Influence, which is a podcast, and they were talking about comic book ads. Mm-hmm. And somebody observed that comic book ads did something no other advertisement could do. They had a secret conversation between a marketer and a child without parental supervision.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think, upon hearing that, I realized that's exactly how I feel about apps, these in-app purchases. We've had my 5-year-old was like, Dad, I can't finish my Pretty Princess game without killing a zombie. I don't want to kill a zombie. Will you do this? Because, you know, the apps advertise other apps and so on.
Yeah.
So this does feel pretty skeezy in my book.
Got it.
Oh, it's my turn.
Yeah.
YouTube TV will continue to be a major sponsor of Major League Baseball. The MLB Network is now carried on YouTube TV and MLB.TV, which gives fans access to all out-of-market game for a yearly price. It'll soon be available within YouTube TV as well.
So now MLB TV in America is on most of the streaming services, I think. It used to be a differentiating factor for me because I'm a baseball fan. Now it's pretty much everywhere. I think that's interesting. Hulu Live TV added the ability to get game start notifications on Android and iOS for your favorite college basketball teams during the NCAA tournament. A dedicated March Madness hub will be available as well to let viewers see what games are available at any given time, as well as catch highlights and recaps.
That's actually a really smart idea. And the only thing that I think is going to go away is the fact that right now I assume you have to say, I am a Cardinals fan, I am an Astros fan, or whatever.
Well, they've got a splash screen. It looks like probably once you log in, it asks you if you want to pick your teams or not.
Yeah. I guess that's the part that I think as AIs get better, 5 years from now, there won't even be that. It'll be like, hey, we read your Twitter. We know what you like.
They'll probably be like, you're a Cardinals fan, right?
Yeah.
Hey, if we got it wrong, click here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Did you use Hulu much for the Olympics, Tom? Because I think they did a similar thing with the sports.
They did. We went through the whole thing and picked all the sports and never watched it on Hulu Live once. We watched the whole thing on PlayStation View or the NBC Sports app.
Did you get the reminders or anything like that?
We never were in the app to find out.
Oh, the reminder's only in the app. It's not like a push notification.
Yeah, no, it never showed up.
Oh, weird. Yeah. Oh, that's a bummer.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. But that's a loud button to press. Any kind of notification things, it's like...
But you're asking,
I mean,
to
be fair, I have notifications off. So they would have given me push notifications if I'd let it.
I see.
MoviePass is testing a ticket verification system based on a select group of users. The test group will be required to photograph their ticket stub before the card can be activated again. MoviePass said these users are not, quote unquote, in trouble.
But they did say they have ended some accounts for doing workarounds like using a 2D ticket to buy a 3D or an IMAX ticket.
Well, and the whole trick to what makes it tricky is that you're spending actual cash. It's not that they're working in partnership with these theaters and these aren't magical coupons. Like, they give you a debit card and you're spending real money. And as soon as that's a real thing, people get real creative about, I mean, think about it. I would imagine some users, boy, here's some scam school talking. It seems to me like you could just hang out in a movie theater and just constantly be waiting to see, oh, you're going to go see, tell you what, it's $7 for a ticket. Just give me $5 and I'll just go and buy it for you.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's a real thing.
That's interesting. Yeah. Also a violation of the terms of service, if I catch you, but yeah.
And this method would not stop it, because you can still take a photo
not
of the ticket
one.
Stub.
Yeah. Like, hold on, I just got to take a... Okay, here you go.
Maybe that's why they were doing the phone
tracking. For the record, I did not mean to just hatch a criminal scheme here.
Didn't plan on.
Just saying, there are ways around this that MoviePass doesn't want you to do. And why don't they want you to buy 3D or IMAX? Because they're trying to create a pure database of 2D movies. Mm-hmm. And probably leaving a little room for the theaters to say, hey, we're not taking that money away from you. We're only taking this money, and we're not even taking that money. So they have a very refined approach, and they don't want you messing with that. It's because it's all about data for them. All right, let's move on to some dispatches. They're from the front. Long time listener and supporter Tim Jar wrote in and said, I got a question related to DVR functionality with streaming services. There's a show I watch on TBS called The Detour with Jason Jones, Samantha Bee producing. I know I can get TBS through the base subscription at Hulu Live or Sling TV or PlayStation View, but how do I know if I can get shows from TBS through the DVR function at any specific one of these services? I don't want to sign up even for a free trial just to find out I can only watch TBS live on that service. Any thoughts on a good reference point to find out this information? I loved the webpage from Recode you linked to, but that only tells you can watch live on any given service, not the DVR. This is an interesting question. I went and looked up, does TBS work with DVR on Sling TV, PlayStation View, Hulu Live.
Right.
Each one of them do have a page where they say, Sling TVs is the worst. It says, you can't do Disney and ESPN, and you might not be able to do others. We're not sure.
Local now.
But it does sound like, from reading this, that TBS is okay on Sling TV. PlayStation View has a little more specific stuff saying, here's the channels that you can't record. There are occasionally shows that you can't record because of rights reasons, which is actually true of Sling TV as well. And then Hulu just has a lovely little fact that says, yeah, you can record everything. So apparently they have no restrictions, or they're lying. One or the other. I'm not sure.
Man, I don't know. Coin flip on that one. Meanwhile, we got an email that says, hello, gentlemen. Just got off the phone with Rogers after my annual Chicken Challenge call. For those longtime listeners, Chicken Challenge is where you call claiming you want to cancel just to see what insane offer they give you to reduce the price. Bell, the other player in the Canadian duopoly, had called me and offered me a great deal to leave Rogers, got a reduction in cost, an extra HD box, and decided to stay with them without a commitment, even though the Bell deal was better. Why? The rep hinted that a streaming TV service was coming in the middle of the year, brought to Rogers Canada in conjunction with Comcast. We've not heard this before. Thank you for giving that tip.
I don't know the veracity of that, but what an interesting way, a gambit to keep someone.
Like, we don't want to leave a vague promise.
You know, don't lose them to streaming services, so give them a discount. Has become, we don't want to lose them to streaming services, so hint that we have one coming.
Right.
Blaine wrote in and said, I used to watch you guys on my Roku through DiamondClub.tv, but you left. Where can I find you now?
We're still here. We haven't gone anywhere.
We actually didn't leave DiamondClub.tv. There was problems with the app. And now it's
CDN. We just don't use the Sarah Levin CDN.
I think you could still get us through on demand through DiamondClub.tv on the web, just not through the app.
Sure,
right?
Because that embeds our YouTube
and Twitch.
And Twitch. If you want to watch us live, we're at Night Attack on Twitch. There's an unofficial Twitch Roku app called Twitched that might get you what you need if you're looking for live. Of course, we're also on YouTube if you just search Chord Killers.
Yeah. Excellent way to find us on demand.
And Gus writes from LA saying, "Hi, Brian, Tom, and guest." No guest.
Hi, Gus.
"In past years, you've had musical introductions for each movie prior to bidding in the summer winter movie drafts. They're great, but you didn't have them in this last winter draft. Please, please, please bring the music back. We agree." This was a bit of a thrown together affair this last time. We're just glad that we made it on time.
It was not a strategically calculated maneuver. Do we know when the movie draft is happening?
It's got to be soon.
I believe our tentative date is the 20th.
The 20th.
Cool.
I need to pencil.
Yeah, we're waiting steadfastly for the final list from the commish before we can start booking people.
She's been busy.
We also got a couple of emails of people saying specifically they love the movie draft stuff, but that's the only thing that they listen to in spoiler in time because they don't watch all the stuff concurrently with when it comes out. I mean, their question was
spoiler in time for that reason.
Exactly, right? Yeah. So it'll always be at the very, very beginning. So just treat spoiler in time like a 5-minute podcast. Just about the movie draft
because it didn't really go with Chord Killers.
Chord Killers is all very outward facing. We talk about the news around us. That's a very inward facing thing. So
our website is chordkillers.com. Our email address is chordkillers@gmail.com, and we're live on twitch.tv/nightattack, which, as we mentioned, also carried on diamondclub.tv Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. I'll be back in California and very sad, but with you next week.
Get ready for Sad Tom.
You'll want to see it.
It's a new podcast.
You won't want to miss it on Total Opinion Land.
Hey guys, Brian and Tom here, and it's just the same old message at the end of the credits, just like always.
That's right, Brian. Nothing new here except your name showing up.
Oh my gosh, I've got a name.
Because you just supported us on Patreon.
Yeah, all those $5 donors, look at that. That's your name in pixels. We're going to make you famous, kid. Put your
name
in pixels on the internet.
There's some classic names in there. But some of you are new. Some of you aren't there. It's sad. What can they do, Brian?
I mean, they could go to patreon.com/chordkillers and pledge $5 an episode and be one of these amazing people. Like this one.
Amazing.
Oh, look at that name right there.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.